So the topic this evening is what methods of sustainability have been tried in conservative Anabaptist churches internationally, and why the ASAL model, which ASAL is the Latin pronunciation of Anabaptist Savings and Loans acronym. You can also, we also understand when you say ASAL, but we like the Latin version of ASAL. So I'll try to answer the last question first. First shall be last, and the last shall be first. But before we go into that explanation, I'd just like to look at a couple scriptures, and just to give us a little bit of something for our thoughts. So Matthew 13:8 says, talking about the parable, some seed fell on good ground, and some brought forth 100-fold, 60-fold, and 30-fold. So the question is, are we okay with having different results? Now, Isaac, I think it was in the Bible, it says that he had some friendship there with Abimelech, and he left, and he planted that year, and the earth brought forth 100-fold. And which was amazing. Are we okay with different results? Number two, Matthew 23:16 says, he that received 5 talents traded the same and made 5 other talents. And likewise, he that received 2 gained 2 more, but he that received 1 digged it and put it in the earth. Are we okay that people perform differently? Can we accept the fact that people will perform differently and that adjustments need to be made? Number three, Matthew 23:26 says, he said to the servants, he says, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchanger, and then at my coming I should have received my own with usury. The question is, are we okay using our talents or money maybe in a unconventional way? We have a lot of ideas how we think, but God is saying, yeah, okay, so we had 2 people that did it the right way, but there is also an unconventional way to do something. And he said the least you could have done it is put the money in with exchangers. So don't always just put everything in one box. Be willing. Are you willing to do something in an unconventional way? Number four says, likewise, when you have done all these things that are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants and have done which was our duty to do. Like, are we okay with just simply doing things because we know that it needs to be done? And we don't even get a thank for it. And sometimes we might even get criticized for it. He just says, do it. Like, if it's something, maybe it's something a little bit unconventional, do it. You might not get any thank for it. Just do it. Are we okay with that? Are we okay of being misunderstood and criticized just because we're doing something a little bit unconventional? Last one, number five, is cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. He that observeth the wind will not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God that maketh all. Are you okay when something works out that you're sure was not going to work out? Like, does that hurt your pride a little bit? Does that, I told them that that was not going to work and it worked out after all. That makes me look bad. Are you okay? Because sometimes God uses the unconventional. God will work things out when we are sure that it's not going to work. Just always remember that God can do a few of those things. To the question, why the Asal model? The most, how would you say, this might sound just a little humorous. In the, back in the 40s, like in the early 1900s, everybody was farming. About 60% of the U.S. people were involved in farming and in food production. And guess what? That when them green things came along, you know, that's called John Deere, we have, like, the percentage is really, really low of people that are involved. I think it's between 1% and 2% of the people in the U.S. are involved in food production, in farming. When 60% all the way down. And it's amazing how technology and how inventions, like, why didn't we all just stay farmers? Like, we were all used to farming back in the 40s. Like, what happened to us? Like, why was it so easy for us just to quit farming or switch over to something else? The point of that is there used to be a lot more business owners. According to statistics, in the United States, 7% of the people are involved. There are business owners that have been business owners, so there's a little bit of criteria here. For 4 years, they make a salary, and they also pay employees. 7%. 7% of the people in the United States provide the income for the other 93%. How important is business? How important is sustainability? A lot of people say, business don't donate very much to our mission project. It all comes from, you know, the $25 that the employees put in the offering. Where did the employees get that $25? They got it from the 7% of our population in the United States make 1/3 of the world economy. Ever heard of the 80-20? The 80-20 rule that was discovered back in 1896, I think it was. It is called the Pareto Principle. He looked at and he said, society seems to divide itself naturally into two camps, the vital few and the trivial many. And he discovered that in 1895, and it is known as the 80-20 rule. Why has, in the United States, why have we become less and less and less business owners and more workers? Why is there only 7% willing to develop business and provide the jobs for all these other 93% of the people? Now, it varies in countries. Like, there's some countries where you have a lot more business owners, the ratio. But kind of the average is between 7% and 16%. But why is a country like the U.S., why do we become lazier and lazier when it comes to business development? Because it's just so much easier just to go in at 8 o'clock, clock in, do your work, go home, spend time with the family, and I can forget everything. So business owners often are not, like, because there's only 7% of them, it looks like they're all just, that's the only thing they can think about is just do business, just do business. So why the Asal model to do business as mission sustainability when all the other missions, all the other projects, all the other programs operate on donated money? Just a comment back to when people make the comment is that businesses, a lot of times, don't donate a lot to mission work, and most of it comes from individuals that give. And there's some organizations that have figured that out real well. They will send you a whole stack of project cards, and they will have a lot of projects because they know that people like to be project specific. And it's the 25, even in the, even the politicians have figured out that you can raise a lot more money by getting a couple million people to send you $25 than get one person to give you a $2 million grant or a $2 million gift for your campaign. You can raise a lot of money with that $25. So why the Asylum model? The very basic and the most humorous one is we want to give that 7% a chance that they can take the money they generate and actually be involved in something where you're creating other businesses. You see, so far, everybody has always just asked for your donations. Now we have one conservative Anabaptist organization out there that is actually made a path for the 7% that feed the rest of us and provide the all that 93 so they can donate money and keep our missions going. They can actually take their business expertise and use and invest that money and receive it back to develop other businesses. Isn't it ironic that for the last 80 years or 100 years where that the conservative Anabaptist community really got into missions, that we have always just depended on donations? And here is something that I'm the type of person that has a little bit of humor, and then I usually like to pull people's chains a little bit. Now the rest of the team knows that. But I'm not very aggressive, but I like pulling the chains. And some of you might have received that email recently where I sent an email out, and it's called the One Talent Fund. Remember this verse that says, the least you could have done, the unconventional thing that you could have done is you could have put my money with the exchangers and got interest. And so I put out this little email and said, Asal has the One Talent Fund, where before you donate your money, you make your money work 1 year, and then you donate it. And with that plan, we could double our donations every 40 years. Wow, did I get some interesting feedback from that one. One person said, that's the Lord's money, and when you give it, you stay unattached with it. It doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that you can't make your donation work 1 year first, does it? There's nothing. But of course, I was looking for some feedback. But just some of the simple things like that. And we have an organization that does give you an opportunity that at the end of the year you can put money in, and then you have the whole next year to figure out where you want to give it away. And so the point was, if we have an organization that does that, why can't we have an organization that will make that work, and then we double our donations? Like, where would we be at in a couple hundred years if our donations all double themselves every 40 years? Versus having donor fatigue. But why the Asal model? Very simple. Businessmen now can actually have the opportunity that they can just invest in developing a business in our missions, but then they get it back. Versus of just giving and giving and giving. And they can become part of the mentoring program to develop a business, clone themselves, how they would say now. like they have the opportunity to. So that's one of the reasons for the vision for ASAL is we wanted to give business owners the opportunity if they would rather invest their money than just go and make a donation, make their money work. And sometimes that equals to way more than the amount of money that they can donate. Okay, what methods of sustainability? Now, sustainability has been something that has been talked about and has been, like, it's been extremely elusive. And it's been tried a lot of different ways. Remember, I said, are we okay with different levels of, you know, whether it gives us 100-fold or 60-fold or 30-fold? So if there's a few things that we need to keep in mind. Every model will have a certain amount of success. And every model will have a certain amount of failures. And here's another 80-20 rule. 80% of your problems come from 20% of the project. And so a lot of times we focus 80% of our attention on the 20% and then we write something off, not realizing the importance of the overall importance of that model. I'm going to give a couple sheets. Can you hand these out? I think I have enough for one for each couple. Maybe Jay can do one side and you can do the other. And if there's some here that... feel free to... If you want more than just one for a couple, feel free to take it. And so we're going to follow this outline here just a little bit. And so I'm going to look at five different business or five methods of sustainability, and especially as we're thinking of our missions. Do we have I have a couple more here. So my wife and I were involved in the first one, the traditional church plants. And the traditional church plants is a very standard model, and it has a very good ratio of success. And so the traditional church plant is a church will get a request for a mission somewhere. They pray about it and they decide. So the very first one is like I mentioned, the traditional church plant. And so the standard way of developing that is you'll have requests come in from other countries, or if there's already mission there will be requests. A number of those requests come in maybe through a disaster service when there's an earthquake or when there's cleanup or whatever. And then people ask for a church plant and a family is sent in. And so it's fairly easy to run this model. It's fairly easy to keep this model going because you need a family. They will go in, and then once they once they want to terminate, someone else can replace them. And often the church will, or the mission will put in a building for the church, and a lot of times it will also do something for the school. And very often it will be some Sunday school material, and the school material. And it just really works in the community. The downside for that then is, so some of the real good things is, it's easy to start, it's easy to get a presence there, and it is also easy to staff. But some of the downsides is, one of the hard things of that is then to wean off of the project, like have the church go on its own, which we all know, those of us that had children, the weaning part is hard. Like that is a that is a serious issue. We had a daughter that liked to suck her two fingers and to wean out, like she was almost ready to go to school. My wife was extremely worried that she would go to school and she would still be sucking her two fingers. It wasn't the thumb, it was the fingers. And she was, but she got weaned off of it. Now, most children will get weaned off of sucking thumbs and that stuff, you know, after age one or two. So the weaning off part of that is the worst. Then we have the donation program, the aid programs that just operate on donations. And the traditional church plants all operate on donations as well. And so we have the aid donation, the aid programs, where we do, you know, for disasters, for sickness, for widows, for orphans, just a lot of aid things. Some of the things that are very typical, some have more importance. Usually water is one of the top ones that a lot of organizations use, is to get donations in for wells and for water. And then there it kind of comes down the list of the importance of things that they're looking for. So on the donation model is wells and water, and then a lot of times food for like orphanages and for schools, and then printing and literature. We have a lot of programs out there that will ask for donations for literature. Literature is a good one to get people to give to. We are close to World Missionary Press. Our church takes turns going in and providing free labor. And it's exciting when you go in there and the machine works well and you print. The goal is to print at least 100,000 booklets or more. If you go over the 100,000, you've been very successful. If it's under 100,000, then you need to pay attention more next time. But those, then of course, agriculture, so I'm kind of reading them in way of importance that a lot of people would look at it. And then of course, agriculture, and then you have packages for widows and elderlies, and just a lot of that. The downside for the aid programs is you have to be very careful not to create a lot of dependency. And then, of course, another direct donation model, two of them, is for savings groups and microloans. And those have been the ones that have come a little bit more to the forefront the last 20 years, maybe. And so microloan programs have actually been around longer than what I expected, but they gained a lot of momentum in the 80s when there was a professor, Muhammad Yunus, in Bangladesh. He received the Nobel Prize, and he did an experiment in Bangladesh, and it was with a group of people. And it made worldwide news of doing microloans and how that made a difference with his culture and with his people. But now the sheet that I passed out to you is all programs are needed. So B, all programs are needed and provide specific solutions. Like, we need to understand that all of the sustainability in missions, all of these five programs are needed. But each program is limited and will have a certain amount of level of success. And here is one that I really liked. I found this on a recording in AF's library. Gary Miller was doing a topic, and he mentioned about the book of Proverbs. He said, the book of Proverbs, you could say, everything that it said in Proverbs is generally true. And so he gave the example of, he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. But our society now is reaching or getting real close to 50% that figure out that didn't find a good thing. I mean, it might be both sides, you know. Why is it? So is the idea not as good as what it used to be, or have people just not learned how to make the idea work? Like, as we get smarter and more educated, why does that ratio go that way? And the same way is why, when we're 60% of us were farmers, why is there now only between 1% and 2% farmers? Or why, when we used to have a lot more business owners, are we down to 7% business owners? Why is it then when we become wiser and have a lot more knowledge and a lot more access, we actually downgrade? Why is that? Instead of, with all the knowledge and everything we have, why is it so easy for us to downgrade versus making it better? And so we just need to understand that all programs will have a level of success. In the microfinance program, he had a very good success story, and so he got the Nobel Peace Prize, and this went global, and so a lot of countries began to do this, and with varying levels of success. So why? Well, they found out that women, which is where he did most of his projects on, are way more honest than men. That was something they hadn't really figured in. And some countries, the women run the market, and some countries, the men run the market. But another really interesting one was women tend to be way more content than men. You help a woman double her income, she will be content. If you help a man double his income, he wants to double it again the next week, and then he wants to double it the next week. And especially if he has a friend that's also doing the same thing, you just can't have him get ahead of me. You see, honest and contentment made it work. But the countries where the men were running the market, it didn't work. So does that mean that the program is not worth anything? No, not at all. You see, we have to be on the letter H. Every person, culture, and country will have its own set of challenges. And we need to understand that, and we need to learn with them. And people and circumstances can and will destroy any program. It doesn't matter what you have. You can have it. Everything. You can have all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. You can have people totally destroy something. So, is the microfinance program a flop? Absolutely not. There are a lot of people that are helped with the microfinance. But it seemed like after the 80s, after 20 years, it just kind of died out. We began to see the flaws what come out of that. And so we've kind of lost interest in the microfinance. The next hottest thing on the block was the savings groups. You know, savings groups, like we do savings. And, but all of these programs have to run on donated money. Your standard traditional church plants runs on donated money. Your aid programs run on donated money. Your savings groups have to have a certain amount of donated money to keep going. The management side of it. And also the microfinance side of it worked on donated money. On the savings side, a few of the things And of course, when you talk to a savings person versus a microfinance person, or any a donation side person or aid person or traditional, the savings probably they could probably consider themselves kind of at the top, and sometimes that shows through a little bit, because they which they probably have the least, I would just say, the least negatives to it. However, they also are having a lot of data coming in, and a few things that they acknowledge and are admit that in some cultures, not in all, if the organization leaves that is running the savings and loans, within 5 years there is no more savings there. There's no more, the groups die out, because there is not that presence there to help them keep going. So that's one of the downsides. Not in all cultures, but in some countries, if the organization leaves, the savings group die out. So it keeps all of us humble, because we know that every program that we have is going to have its weakness. And if people want to, they can destroy it. But it also has a lot of good to it. Now, the last one is kind of the newest one, and that is the business development companies, the BDCs. And so ASAL is considered a BDC, a business development company. Those came in around... I thought I had the date here when those came in. But those came in kind of in the 80s and the 90s as well. And when the banks, because of conflict of interest, you could not ask your banker to give you financial advice. And so, but then as time went on, people were saying, well, a lot of times the banker has the education. Now get it. The banker has the financial education. That's why he's a banker. And he could often help us make good decisions if we wouldn't have that law there that the banker is not allowed to be a counselor to the one that has a loan from him. Because the banker has the education. So they began to realize that education is a strong part of successful businesses, and so they did some studies, and like we have the 80-20 rule, where you have the vital few and the trivial many, we found out that's a little bit the same way with talents. Like you will have a certain percentage of people where it's just natural for them to do something. Like it just naturally works for them. There is a man in Belize, he cannot read or write, can't sign his name, and he is one of the richest men there. He just knows how to handle money. He doesn't know how to read, he doesn't know how to write. He has someone else signing his checks, but he understands money. He has the natural gift. And if we look in the Old Testament, God said when they got ready to build the tabernacle. Yes, I was going to say temple, but that wasn't right. The tabernacle, he said, there's a couple people here that I have put in them that they're just going to know how to do all the works of this and this, and everybody else needs to get their training from them. So it becomes very apparent that God has a certain amount of people, and so we've kind of just, like I've, at least myself, just kind of put that number at 10. You know, it probably varies some, but 10% of the people are just going to have the knack. So when I was about 13 years old, one day my sister came up and said, Roman, she said, you can't sing. In our family devotion, all you do is go, monotone. I knew it. When she just told me what I already knew, she had the gift of singing. She and my second sister and their cousin, they had a trio, and they were pretty good, and they were often asked to sing. And it really bothered her that I didn't know how to sing. But you know, the ironic thing was, she didn't know how to teach a 13-year-old boy how to sing. And so, case closed. She left me know. I came to the U.S. at age 17, went to Bible school, and I looked at all the subjects in there, and it says, oh, Rudiments of Music, Class 1. Oh, well, I better take that one. My sister said I can't sing. I have to take responsibility to learn how to sing, because what if all these other youth hear me sing like my sister said that I sing? That's not going to work out too good. So I took the class 3 weeks, took the test, and I got a 66. Huh. Well, then I knew I couldn't sing. However, guess what? I knew 66% more than I did. So the next time I went, I took it again, passed that time. You see, 10% of the people just have the gift. The other 90% of us have to learn. Like someone else has to teach us. And once that formula kind of gets engraved in us and we understand that there is, and so when the statistics tell us that only 7% of the population in the United States have businesses, then we begin to ask, well, how many of them just have the natural gift, and how many of them are actually trained? So maybe the natural gift is actually lower than the 10%. But still, if you want to just use some, if you want to use a general rule of thumb like Proverbs, let's say 10% of the people can do it naturally, that still means that the other 90% of us have to learn. So to finish off here, it says each program, going to letter D, each program is limited and cannot provide a total sustainability solution. So often we're like, we just want to get this one program that just cures everything. Like, can't we just put something together that cures everything? Well, you know what that one solution would be? Is if all 1 through 5 would learn to work together. If all 1 through 5 would learn to work together, you would have that solution. But guess what? We tend to criticize, we tend to see the faults of each group versus saying we actually need all 5 of these. And if we have all 5 of these in every community, this would work for mission sustainability. And of course, we did not have, under conservative Anabaptists, we did not have the number 5 till the last 5 years. And so it's very new yet as well. All programs have about 80% of things that are generally true, and we're just doing the 80-20, and the rest varies. Every program will create sustainability. Each of these programs will create a certain amount of sustainability, but all of them also create dependency. And we have found that out very clearly. People enjoy just depending on their coach. And we have one of the requirements for having a loan with Anabaptist Savings and Loans is you are required to have a coach all the way through the loan. Once you have the loan paid off, your business does not need the coaching. But you do need a coach as long as you have a loan with us. And the accountability is amazing. G, people and circumstances can and will destroy any program. Every person, culture, country will have its own set of challenges, and so you have to be willing. And the missions that have missions in a number of different countries, those mission boards find that out really fast. They find out really fast that this works in this country and this does not work in another country. And I read a book from a person that was in, he was over in Africa, and he was developing horse-drawn implements, and all of a sudden he was totally shocked. They developed a little something, and this tribe was using it, and it worked real good. They went to the neighboring tribe, and they said, absolutely, you don't dare bring that in here. We are never going to do something that tribe's doing. And they just complete, like, and he was, you know, he was from the U.S., and he was like, how could you be that dumb? Like, you see that they're doing it, but they would absolutely not touch it because there's no way that they're going to do something that this tribe is doing. Now, if they would have invented it first, then they would have had the advantage. Then that tribe. And I thought that was really interesting. So people will have, every person, culture, and country will have its own set of challenges. What works for one person might not work for another person. What can be integrated into one culture could be rejected by another. What is legal in one country can easily be rejected in another country. Globally, varied by countries, between 8 to 16% of the people provide the sustainability for the rest. Amazing. Those are things that just I had never thought about, never really sunk into my mind. There is such a small fraction of the people that make the business world go around, and we have not provided anything for them in our missions. Then we have the Pareto principle, where you have the vital few and the trivial many. For God to keep the human race going, often a certain percent is born with a natural gift that just works for them, and possibly 10%, which means the other 90 will need to be taught. The whole point behind that percentage there is that we understand that most of them have to be taught. And we have not provided our missions with any support on the business development side of it for the local people that do come to church, or even the ones that go. A lot of mission boards will tell you, we hardly ever are able to get a business-minded person to go on to missions because he is busy at home working his business. Like, he's interested in business. He's not interested in missions. But that doesn't mean that he can't help train somebody else. And a lot of times they'd be more than happy to go spend a week or two training someone else. But they always come back. They don't feel the calling to go do mission work.